Forget about water safety in Bridgeport. I mean, don't think about going to Pleasure Beach or whatever, because that's been shut down for so long. People don't know why, and there's no bridge to it. People can't get there. When it's too hot, they shut it down, and nobody wants to talk about what happened at Pleasure Beach other than the discreet and discerning listeners here. But our public officials, they're just too busy. But doing what? Did you see the story in today's Connecticut Post by Brian Lockhart? Bridgeport to study police force staffing as overtime spikes. Now, I don't spend enough time in Bridgeport to know just whether the streets are fit for human habitation, whether folks feel safe walking around there, what's going on. But listen to this. Bridgeport budgeted for the 2021 fiscal year. That's the year that ended in June, on June 30th. It budgeted $5.5 million for police overtime. Okay, you know, you got to have expected and foreseeable overtime. Crash occurs, it changes shift. You don't send the officers home. Listen to what they spent. The city spent nearly $10 million during that period. It nearly doubled its overtime expenses. Why? Well, arguably, there aren't enough police officers. Acting Police Chief Rebecca Garcia says that while she has 286 officers on the force, it's arguably at least 130 short. In other words, in order adequately to take care of the city, it needs about 400 cops. And the police union agrees. She's short, so therefore the city's spending boku bucks on overtime. Is this the sort of pathology that gets produced by defund the police chatter? The fact of the matter is, you may not want to have a police force, but you're going to have people who take advantage of one another. You're going to have rape, robbery, murder, people fleeing from the scene of accidents, and people taking advantage of one another when they think no one is looking. And I'm not saying Big Brother is necessary, but I am saying we need a police force that can at least assure public safety. And when the Bridgeport Police Department allocates $5.5 million for overtime and spends nearly double that amount while it's 130 officers short, somebody in City Hall's got some splaining to do. And if you're living in Bridgeport, why do you tolerate this kind of stuff? I mean, Joe Ganim, you know, instead of pleading for his law license to do pro bono, you know, a return of his law license so that he can do pro bono work for people who are down at their heels. Hey, Joe, memo, you're blowing the budget on overtime in Bridgeport. And if you're short 130 or so cops, according to the chief, what are you going to do to make Bridgeport residents feel safer such that the city becomes an attractive place for people to go? Joe, are you listening? Or are you too busy trying to get your law license back? We've got a call from Rich in Bridgeport. Rich, what's up?
You know, Joe's been focused on that law license shenanigans, and little by little, he comes out and says, well, I did some things I shouldn't have up to. I made a mistake back in 2015 where he comes out at the church to now where he finally gives his mea culpa. You notice when he ran for governor, he conceded, oh, I did terrible things. And, of course, Joe lost 168 out of 169 municipalities, and even in Bridgeport, he barely won. So, nothing against Jailbird Joe, but it's,
Jailbird
you know,
Joe. Whoa, look, nothing against look, him. No, no, nothing against that moral monster, Jailbird Joe.
but to be fair, Bridgeport gets who they select, and he was, you know, he did his time, he paid his debt to society, and here he's back. So, you know, far be it for me to judge him further than the justice system already has. But if there's one failing, beyond the fact that we haven't had any serious job creation or economic development push in the last, since JG2 started.
JG, oh, Joe Ganim 2. Okay, thank you. It took me a moment, you know. Yeah.
His second stint. He's trying to.
You know, I have a twin brother. My first brother made Mensa. I'm the sloppy seconds guy. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, Jasper McLevy has the record for terms in Bridgeport. He first ran for office in 1901 when he was 23.
Wow.
And he ran and lost just about every year for 32 years. And then finally in 1933, McLevy won the mayor's race. And he didn't concede it. He was mayor until 1957 when Tedesco stole the election from him. He ran again in 59. He lost and he promptly died. But McLevy holds the record, 24 years, and Ganim's certainly trying to pursue that.
So how in the world do you know these things? I love the fact that you do, and I encourage you to call back and regale us with these facts. Tell me about yourself. Who are you? And What makes you such an expert on Bridgeport history? And that's not a challenge, by the way. That's an honest request to want to know more. I'm intrigued.
Everybody should know about where they live and their birthplace. And I'm just the average guy trying to make his way in the world, and I happen to have an interest in.
Oh yeah. And the guy who runs an Olympic marathon in record time, he's just out for a jog. You just spouted off more knowledge about Bridgeport than I suspect 99% of Bridgeport people would know if they studied the city for a year. Do you still live in Bridgeport?
Well, let me put it this way: I would love to be the Bridgeport historian, the city historian, but they do require city residency. So I suppose.
All right.
And also, I think not being a Democrat probably it doesn't help my cause either. But
what do you make of this story in today's Connecticut Post about the police department spending almost double its allotted overtime budget for 2021-22 when it's short 130 of about 400 officers? That just seems stupid to me. I mean, if they had enough officers to carry their regular shift, they could have saved money rather than paying time and a half, just pay straight time. Am I missing something?
Well, I think this kind of ties into the Nardozzi suit. James Nardozzi, who was removed from his position long ago, he had pledged to clean up overtime. And, of course, the Bridgeport Police Department and Nardozzi had a dispute. Cops love overtime. Who doesn't love getting paid more, right?
Yeah.
And, unfortunately, the way the system is set up now, there's no real incentive to, you know, fulfill the need to, you know, get hire more cops. Because the existing officers... I'm sure they'd love to have, you know, a little more even amount of work split among them just for safety purposes. But financially, they're making bank because there aren't enough and somebody's got to fill the hole.
Yeah, it's not uncommon for a municipal police officer to make more than $100,000 a year with overtime in. And when you consider that, you know, there's no college requirement for this job, that's pretty good money. On the other hand, you know, I'm not sure I want the guy responding to an emergency at my home to be working 80-hour weeks. I'd like him to be on the top of his game, alert and oriented. What's the solution?
Well, I mean, if you've seen in the past, somebody like James Honus. Mm-hmm. James Honus, who you want to talk about records in Bridgeport, the guy didn't take a day off in, I believe, it was at least 45 years of police service. Mm-hmm. And he had a monster check waiting for him, about $400,000 or more, and that was all the vacation time that he never used. And you see him, you know, after a year of a sabbatical, I'm not sure who has a longer ponytail, him, you, or me, but he certainly, you know, cashed in. But
well, what's wrong with that, though? If he didn't take his time, isn't he entitled to take it out at the end? And maybe that was his retirement plan.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But if you look at local municipalities, a lot of times these police departments are not putting forth the same favorable terms to their new hires as they used to. And they'll try to make up for it like Trumbull does in the form of a signing bonus.
Yeah.
$5,000.
No, 20 I read. I read $20,000 signing bonus. Yeah.
Right, for the first 4 years. Yep, so it will add up to 20.
Okay.
Again, you get the money up front, but you want the money at the back end. And unfortunately, it's a real tough recruitment problem when the suburban districts, which arguably would have a lighter safety issues, we'll call it, than, say, Bridgeport. And even they're having trouble recruiting. They just hired two new officers.
Rich, stick around. There's a voice in my ear that says the ad man must speak. You're listening to WICC 600 AM, 107.3 FM, WICC600.com if you're live streaming. Yeah, that's pretty cool. News lit fit. I listen to the ads here every now and then, and I get an idea what to do next. Like that time I bought a bunch of food from MyPatriot.com. I am ready for the apocalypse. You should be too. So, Rich, while I have you, thanks for waiting over the ads. Pleasure Beach, you know so much about Bridgeport. What in the world is going on there? How did the city and Stratford, how do they manage to let this gem deteriorate? And is there a way to get it back and accessible to the people?
Pleasure Beach was created in 1892. It used to be called Steeplechase Island. It was owned by George Tillieu. He also owned Coney Island, so you see a lot of similarities between the two.
Oh, I didn't know
Coney
that.
Island.
Interesting.
Coney Island is a thriving park to this day, and Pleasure Beach is a ghost town. Through the teens up until about the 60s, it was, a thriving amusement park. Eventually, the amusement park closes down. White flight starts to happen in the East End and throughout Bridgeport. And eventually a series of fires. The Midway burned in 72 or 73. And then, of course, the bridge burned in June of 96. It happened on Father's Day, actually. And in true theater fashion. The show went on. There was a play going on in the polka dot at the time. At that time, there were a host of cottages that were leased out, or the landhold was leased out by the town of Stratford. And those were on what we call Long Beach West, although colloquially everybody calls it Pleasure Beach. And at that point, they started kind of living on their own. They had to take boats to get their supplies out there. In 07, Stratford evicted them, offered them a $10,000 buyout. Some people said, you know, go take a long walk off the, the Pleasure Beach Bridge. Eventually, they went to ruin. Remember, there was a sign out there. It says, this property guarded by shotgun 4 days a week, but you guess which 4 days.
That's a pretty good sign, actually. Well, what do we got to do to get that place back and up and running? I mean, if Coney Island can remain an ongoing concern, why can't Pleasure Beach be restored?
Well, in order to build a bridge out there, it has to be able to open back to the Lewis Gut, the Yellow Milk Creek, the Johnson's Creek, Yellow Milk Channel, and it has to be able to allow commercial marine traffic. There's a tremendous amount of
How deep
oil
does it
storage.
Have to go there?
I don't know the exact depth, but I know that right now it is sufficient for those boats to get back there to the storage.
Well, I know in Wellfleet, for example, that's a beachfront community on Cape Cod, they get federal grants to dredge and make sure that the area is accessible to maritime craft of all sorts. I can't believe that if somebody in Bridgeport, a municipal official, took this under their his or her wing, they wouldn't be able to accomplish the same thing, no?
Well, the main problem, though, is the bridge has to be able to swing open or be a drawbridge. An ordinary causeway across there, wouldn't work. Doc Gunther, he was the 23rd.
Oh, yeah, I remember Doc.
For, And he wanted to build a causeway at the end of Watkins Boulevard, which is off of Lordship Boulevard. And of course, you know, Doc Gunther was the biggest champion of Pleasure Beach, but even he couldn't get it done. And that's the problem. You have to be able to open it. Dredging's not the entire issue. You have to be able to allow boats to go through. So at this time.
And what's a bridge like that cost? You know, you've got to have it manned, obviously, by somebody in a watch house. But, I mean, this is not something that can be accomplished by way of tax revenue or federal grant money to make beaches accessible to the people of New Haven? Isn't that worth an investment?
It very well may be, but the problem is with the budget so strapped as it is, and the education budget, you know, even always under the sharpest of microscopes, can you justify building a bridge essentially to nowhere? I mean, Fox News once cited that, saying, hey, look, you know, the Democratic administration wants to waste several hundred thousand on a study to see about the bridge. I said, well, that's the one time the Democratic administration actually did something for the city of Bridgeport. The legislative delegation must have woken up that time and said, hey, let's try to do this.
I don't know. I think it's a crime. If I were a Bridgeport resident or a Stratford resident, I think I'd be all over City Hall saying we've got this, you know, 6,500 acre, whatever it is, site that resonates in the minds of older residents as a place of summer magic and mystery. And what all it's going to take is a bridge a drawbridge apparently of some sort. There's been money allocated to the bridge, $2 million that I don't know how it was ever spent. Let's just get it done. Rich, will you call back sometime and keep us educated on Bridgeport?
Absolutely. Thank you, Norm.
You know, thanks for calling in. Call anytime. I love talking to you. It's like an open history book, this guy. Hey, what's going on in Brookfield? Any Brookfield residents out there? I'm looking at today's Connecticut Post. Court filing. Feds investigating dissemination of nude photos of former Brookfield students. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mom, can you give me a ride to school today? Sure, honey. Give me 5 minutes to get ready. Pick your daughter up at the end of the day. How are you? I don't know. There's a naked picture of me at school online, and all the kids are laughing. Hello? That's our public schools? That's what's going on in Brookfield? Listen to this. More than a year after discovering nude photographs of themselves circulating on social media, a pair of former Brookfield students are seeking documents and communications from 11 school administrators and members of the Brookfield Police Department as they search for answers to how these nude photographs ended up on the internet. They had to hire their own lawyers. One of these, and they're both apparently young females. Their names are not in the paper, thankfully. One graduated in 2017, so that'd make her in her early 20s. The other in 19, late teens, early 20s. They've gone to the Danbury Superior Court to file a request that the town be compelled to give information up about who may have posted nude photographs of them taken on school property online. They claim they learned about this from a federal agent that learned through a search warrant. There were some photographs on a cell phone and flash drive in possession of a former school resource officer assigned to the Brookfield High School. His name is in the newspaper. I don't know whether he's been charged. I don't know enough to want to just repeat the name gratuitously. But take a look at the Connecticut Post. The school district in Bridgeport, the school board, has placed somebody on leave because federal officials found nude photographs of students at the Brookfield School in his phone. What's going on? Now, you know, a spokesman for the U.S. Attorney's Office says we can neither confirm nor deny any investigation. Well, the girls are getting tired of wondering how much longer they're going to have to look at these photos. So they've hired a couple local lawyers, one of whom is Phil Russell out of Stamford, a pit bull of a man. I've had cases with him and against him. I much prefer being on his side. Brookfield Police Chief John Puglisi told the reporters that the local police department investigated a complaint about the images before federal authorities, and then that this school official was suspended last August, and then he resigned because of an internal investigation. This fellow can't be reached. But so in August of this year, the young women go to court. And they file a complaint, basically a petition with the court saying, can you please compel the Brookfield School District to give us the information it has in its possession about its school resource officer possessing nude photographs of us and how these photographs were distributed online? And, you know, the Brookfield School Board should be saying, oh, yes, we'll be opening our files to you so that you can learn more about how your privacy was breached. Oh, yes, we'll tell you how one of our employees, perhaps on the job, managed to get photographs of you nude while you were on school premises. You would think the school board would be open and honest and forthcoming about this because it would realize that its credibility was at stake in its local community. If you've got somebody who views the school grounds as a hunting zone for naked pictures of young girls, don't you think parents would want to know about that? And so, you know, one of the school board officials is quoted in the paper as saying, well, you know, I haven't really received the summons yet for asking me for information, and I'm surprised that this document was filed. I can't comment on it because it's an ongoing criminal investigation, and I can't believe the court is even going to entertain this discovery because there's still a criminal investigation going on. Hey, folks, this is years old now. Sometimes people get a little frustrated when law enforcement dilly-dallies and when a school board circles the wagon behind what sounds like a man who is close to being a sexual predator. Phil Russell, the lawyer for one of the girls, said, what happened in the school system remains a mystery, but our clients are fairly sure there's more to the story than we know. When they made the complaint to the town of Brookfield, there was little follow-up and very clearly no interest, Phil Russell said. School officials declined to comment on if they were aware of the allegations against one of their former employees, and it's unclear they were even aware of the allegations against him prior to the petition being filed. Come on. Really? So here's the takeaway. A federal officer finds a cell phone. He has authority, apparently, to look in a cell phone. The cell phone belongs to a former school employee. So the story reads. At least that's the inference I draw. That person is confronted by the Brookfield School Board, apparently, and he decides he's going to take a leave. And as the investigation unfolds, the person resigns. These young women, there's still no criminal case made against anyone. And it could be that these young women were old enough not to be minors within the meaning of the law, so the photographs that were depicted wouldn't be child pornography. But isn't there something wrong? Doesn't it violate some law, some sense of decency, that a school employee would take a picture of a student nude and then put it online so that the kids could find out about it? That just seems sick to me. And so for Brookfield Board of Education Chairman Bob Belden, to say, the board is aware of the petition that the girls filed in court. We are consulting with counsel, but as a practice, the board does not make any comment on personnel or pending legal matters. That is all I can say. Well, what are you going to say to those girls, and when are you going to say it? Mr. Belden, I mean, seriously, do you not have any sense of accountability to your community or to the young women and young men who place their sense of well-being in your hands? Is this what passes for education in Brookfield? Circle the wagons and hope the young women go away? I hope that Phil Russell kicks them in the rear end so hard, that they end up with hot cross buns. Not just that vertical crack, but a horizontal crack. Go get them, Phil.